This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
For the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show.
A lovely day out there, and glad you could join. And if you have any questions or comments, not going to have any real specific topics per se in any main one, because I've been a little delayed in receipt of some documents that I'm following up on a couple of matters. But, you know, it's, for some reason, the state and other agencies believe that if you delay the guy for a couple of days, he'll just forget it, you know. And that's probably right for most of us. So, you know, a little delay and nothing will happen and won't get to talk about it. But we will be returning to the scene of the crime, so to speak. So if you want to listen to this on the Internet, go to KWAI 1080 AM on the radio dial. And you could also go to carolcox.com. And so, anyway, several things out there. And again, feel free to call up and talk about a couple of things. We talked about the handy van. I didn't make it to the meeting and didn't sound as if I missed much other than the same old dog and pony show that, you know. And there seems to be a love-hate relationship amongst the users, and there was one person called and said they had problems with me sharing, and I get an email later that I guess everything is going to be kumbaya. So I'm learning maybe just to listen to people and let them vent themselves and then gravitate back to those meetings and gravitate back to the good guys. And for the world of me, I'm searching my heart and mind still to try to understand why people would go out and complain about someone and just dust up the character of the person and the works, and then when they get a chance to convey to others where there might be a little juice to get that person in government or wherever to do what's right, you hear, well, he's a nice guy. Well, I'm not very good at dealing with clinical illnesses and things of that nature. I don't know what the purpose of people, other than maybe to conclude that they're just venting. And then I, having come to that conclusion, I will continue to help advocate in an open forum and share those things that I know. But I'm with great reluctancy now to go out and engage on behalf of entities that bitch in the morning and come evening time, sit around the round table and feel important and leave with the same injury that you arrived at those meetings, accomplishing nothing. So you still have a friend here, but you won't have the 911 friend who dons on the emergency suits to go out to help you than to learn that it's really not that bad because he's a nice guy. So don't count me out of in the scheme of things, but do realize that I don't like hurrying to firefights. And when you get there, you either approach it logically and call a spade what it is, name the names, and because you're hoping to impact and have a change on people that should be doing what's right. Anyway, 524-1080 is the number. Now, you know, I want to share something with you. There's several things brewing. And over on Kauai, there's the proposed dairy, the Hawaii dairy over there, that a pretty large dairy, the Hawaii Dairy Farms. And it got me to thinking, there's an organized effort there to deal with this, the impacts and what have you. And it involves, they're concerned, and rightfully so, the urine and the waste generated by the cattle and the dairy farms. And they're worrying about the impacts on the coral and what have you. And I'm thinking, let's go back in time for a bit. I'm not taking issue with the scientists today who say that there's the temperatures are heated and therefore the climate is changing and causing death or harm to the coral.
But here in Hawaii, there is a history of dairies. And I got to thinking, what are the impacts of those dairies that did exist here and the few that remains on the coral, on the ocean life, the nitrates and trites that ran down and clinged to the clay, and what about the ammonia that's in the urine, and how many cows per acre, and how many cows, and whatever happened to that waste? And you got to get to thinking, and you figure, if not regionally, these dairy farms had an impact. What was the runoff? Where did it go? Could that be contributing also to the decline and the demise of the coral and methane that is generated by these cows? Could we be seeing impacts or effects from the earlier activities as well? So if that is true, then the health department and the EPA and anybody else in their right mind would take great caution and in reviewing these permit requests, especially like the Hawaii Dairy Farms on Kauai, and any other entity that requests things that would create problems. And so a cow produces maybe an adult cow. They are estimating maybe somewhere close to 150 pounds of waste per day. And multiply that by the number of cows per day in a certain herd. Could that not be? I think Waimanalo had a dairy. I know that Waianae had dairies. And where did that material go into the streams, and what happened to it? So these are some very important issues, and maybe if we go back and look at the historic use, how dairies, and we don't even introduce yet the sugar cane, the pineapple, and the intense agricultural practices that occurred. We don't need to inject those into it yet. Just looking at we know that in the Chesapeake Bay, fisteria from hog farms and the waste from the hogs created problems and for the fish population and diseases and bacteria and what have you. So when we look at the denuding and the death of the coral, and mind you, when we see coral whitening now, we're not seeing it in a community of perfect coral anyway. You see, that's the other thing. And so the remnants or what's left of a halfway decent, respectable cluster or colony of coral is standing, and it's threatened. But around that is coral that has been destroyed by some environmental factors, either generated by man or nature. But if man's activities have rendered it to the brink of where things could crash, and maybe that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing the decline. And then we see introduction of sea urchins. And I was chuckling in California when I was a game warden back there. We were the uni or the sea urchin, the vana. Part of our duty was to go out and just take a hammer and just break away at the sea urchins to eradicate them and to the just get them out, because they would eat the kelp and the seaweed. So I was chuckling and seeing them talk about introducing vana, and mind you, it's a native one, and they say to the Kaneohe Bay. And I'm thinking, well, is this another mongoose rat story? Cattle egret insect story? I don't know. But again, this thing with the dairy farm
and the proposed one on Kauai, and the funny part is the milk that's being produced on Kauai that they're proposing, it will be brought here to Hawaii, to Honolulu, and processed and what have you. So there's a scheme, and I've reached out and tried to get, send an email request to the group there, Mahalapua community group, to try and see if they would be willing to come on and share with us this discussion about the dairy farms over there. Maybe you've seen it. It's been featured in the newspaper, and there's some serious issues about it, and you know, if you want to look at that, I'd encourage you, if you are interested, go to mahalepu.org and look that up, and you will see some very interesting information about what is being proposed. I think the Surf Rider Foundation is part of that, and Sierra Club. But again, those are the things that are occurring on that island. But we come back to Honolulu, and talking about so let's add this up. You have construction, waste runoff. You have non-point source pollution runoff along the streets and highways throughout the island. You have homes and gardens and golf courses generating their waste. And then you have the household waste, which is generated through the sewage treatment plants and pumped out into the ocean into an outfall. Could that not be something? And I'm this is my third time talking about this on the show, is because I'm hoping that someone out there will understand that there's a tendency in the science community, I've observed, that they take issues. Every year there's a hot-button issue, and then there's a great degree of salesmanship. And what that suggests to me, and I've historically now I've witnessed it, it means money. So when you get something that becomes, you describe it in a scientific fashion, that it's a threat, and I'm not taking issue whether it is or not, and we find ourselves in a position where we're hearing this boom, boom, and we're being bombarded. Somewhere down the line, there's money involved, and there's grants. And I have to tell you, I have a little bit of concern as a citizen, as a taxpayer, as a person who's concerned with the environment, that many of these, quote, hot-button issues sometimes are genuine and bona fide, but they get flamed, and the flames are fanned, and they get talked up to the point where everybody becomes fearful. And then the next thing is we're getting millions and millions of dollars in grants to study it, while the real issues are not being addressed, such as the sewage and such as the runoff and what have you. So these are really serious. And when I mean serious, I know it's saying it's implicating people and indicting others and suggesting that they would stoop so low to trigger something like this just for the sake of getting money. But, you know, there are a lot of professors out there that have been known to seek the golden parachute. Because, and in fact, in their case, who's going to argue with them? What are you going to draw on from debate? They've scared the hell out of you already. And letting you know that the world is ending, and you know, and this is it, and it's critical, and we are really, 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 and that's not to say that these things are not up on our doorsteps. That, and I'm, of all people, I'm really concerned about the decline in these species and the quality of the environment. But just, I'm not hearing the full healthy discussion. Either the group on Kauai is struggling to fight and get the word out and get the health department to do samples and move their butts and what have you. And over here they're doing, this health department is dragging its feet. You take Kahalu'u Pond, and I have some
things that on Kowloon Pond that I went to the state and asked them. I wanted to know in writing what is it that would allow you to drag your feet, so to speak. And I go away with, and I'd already had concerns with the fact that it's possibly there's some politics involved in this Kahalu'u matter. And then let me explain to you how I and this is picking at strings, but because I'm here in Hawaii and I have come to learn how Hawaii works and how the government works, when it's really not the government. The government is an entity that is as pure as it can be. You wake up in the morning, you put it to bed, it's still pure. It's the crud that gets in government that goes unchecked, uncleansed, unpoliced. That is where, you know, you get the weevils in the wheat, so to speak. That's where you get the bugs in the grain. They go unchecked. So I believe out there at the Kahalu'u side, and I'm going to share with you some of the documents that because I was in pursuit of this, I can't believe that something so dangerous could be allowed to be guessed at. There's too much guesswork in it when this is a matter of life and death with people. When you go out there and you got a sore, you can get MRSA, you can get a disease, a bacteria that can kill you, a staph. And we're talking about fecal matter. So, back in 2009, the state had a, funded by the EPA, the state had a program sanctioned. Let's entertain this caller first, and then we'll go back to this. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning, Mr. Cox. I know you are monitoring the well-being of our Aina in Hawaii Nei. Do you realize we have a financial crisis looming within 6 years in the United States of America, and Hawaii should be shoring up its reusable energy and the idea of having ships coming to the islands who deliver supplies to be sure that when those crises we face, energy crisis, financial crisis, they say, some experts say within 6 years there will be a depression greater than the Great Depression back in the 1929s and 30s. I know you're a very effective community advocate, but greater issues are looming for the world and the people of Hawaii. I'd like to hear your comment on that. I'll just hang up and listen on the radio, Mr. Cox.
Well, you can stay on because I don't have a whole lot to say in theory. I can talk for hours about what can and what can't. I understand that in 2016, there's going to be a major, as you listen to the airwaves, and there's going to be a major financial cluster. But, you know, I've learned something, and not to simplify this discussion, but I've learned over the years, there's always a potential of some great disaster looming, always. But sometimes they can be averted. And sometimes by the way you avert them is address the small things first so that when it does come, you're somewhat prepared, not caught off guard and painted in a corner. And all of these things that we talk about today is relevant. Imagine what if the financial collapse came? And what if we had taken care of our resources, the taro patches and the water, and not diverted it and consumed it with highways and roads and what have you and the pollutions? What if we have done that? It's not to say that we would be immunized from the failure of the financial crises, but at least we'd be a little better off to weather the storm. But now, where would you go to get a fish? Where would you go to get a piece of taro? where would you go and pick guava or YV or some of the other plants that would be consumed that you could naturally normally, but you now prevented from doing that because it's either on state lands or the lands that were containing these or housing these or home for this species or these plants are no longer accessible. What if we didn't privatize Ko'olina, the area there, and give you 2 or 12 little parking spots where the public would have greater access to go out and sustain themselves and forage? What if that was the case? Well, what I try to convey is not to tackle the giant all at once, but point out the smaller things, and if we pay attention to the smaller things, then whatever falls at our doorstep, we're likely to be able to deal with it and weather with it than being caught right now. We're just by the seat of our pants. You agree?
I agree with you, Mr. Cox, that the footage that we bear in feeding ourselves and our ohanas is very important, especially when crises like a financial situation comes about. But you realize that if we don't have reusable energy, we cannot put on the light, we cannot cook our food, we cannot flush our toilets. And like you said, it's a collaborative effort,
mm-hmm.
caring for the aina so that we can feed ourselves and so that our system is clean, the water system is clean. It's very important, like you said, the small things, but small but yet necessities of life.
Mm-hmm.
We should work on all the problems and be a realist as to what we're going to face. We're privileged to be in the middle of the Pacific, so we can, I believe, address all these problems, especially for sustainability. Like you said, caring for the smaller things, which is actually our needs,
mm-hmm.
for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to find a way so that we have enough energy to run our Hawaiʻi and to be sure that what we cannot provide for ourselves and the ships coming in, that we maintain the commerce of our state.
Yeah.
Like you said, you are addressing issues that we can solve.
Are issues that will enable us to be able to have a flat, a firm foot to deal with anything that is presented to us. Some things are just not, you can't deal with. But let's work this backwards. When we say sustainable energy, I agree, we need that. But here is the problem. Sustainable energy to sustain the light bulbs on these humongous towers that they're building now that Abercrombie and others are approving and rushing to build, and for Howard Hughes Foundation and all of those people. Is it to sustain that, or are we to say, hold off? This is an island community. The carrying capacity is only so much in reality, mathematically. Anything beyond a certain number or what have you, whatever the equation you use, is artificial. And as long as it's artificial and being created and exponentially and created daily, and then you introduce a rail, the energy consumption of that. See, you're right, and I agree with you. We need to look at the energy sustainability, but we also must hold in check the nutty politicians who believe that you can build a bridge to the moon and have no consequences. You follow?
I understand. I guess the public servants believe that having and building these real estate properties of condominiums and big projects like that, maybe the mentality is to keep the people busy with the day-to-day activity, and problems like that really is facing society is not addressed, or otherwise it would create anarchy in society. It would create such a confusion and uproaring that it would confuse people and cause so much problems that there would not be maruhiya in civil order. Of course, such things, can we say that are we really addressing the real problems facing our society?
Right.
How else can people, if people are idle, somebody said that idleness is the work of the devil.
Well, I don't know, what the devil is, but you're right. People just sitting around. But again, let's go back and look at, take for example, when we look at government entities that are supposed to have the concerns. Let's take DHHL, Hawaiian Homeland. They're quicker to have a solar farm on areas than to have an entrepreneur who has the desire to grow a variety of taro and set it up and ate that person to set it up, so he would be industrious, he or she would be industrious, would be supporting the needs of a native community. But even that presents a problem, because the people that are heading these agencies and the governors that are elected and appointed really has no real heart or desire or mana for the entire issue. They're looking to the stars, and all that glitter is gold in their mind. And so sustainability has escaped us over and over and over. And I've gone to the Big Island in the recent past, and I am amazed, astounded at the amount of development. And yet, they placed a burden on you and I, the people at this strata, to talk and discuss sustainability, when in fact we still, at the end of the day, when we complete our conversations, we have to defer and wait until someone in the PUC who is appointed by the governor and the legislators and what have you to come up with a process that is fair and equitable. I don't know about you, but I question the whole thing about sustainability. It's doable, but not in the climate here in Hawaii. Unless it changed, let me qualify that.
I had newsletters from Phyllis Lashley, and she says that what creates culture is the public schools, is the educators in schools that teach the young children who and what they can become. Is the education system, it's the ground roots that develop the kind of people that make life in our Hawaiʻi productive citizens. So it starts with education. It's the grassroots. The education system has to teach sustainability and farming and caring for the aina and being responsible. That's where it starts.
Yeah. In the old days, the average person would be referred to as being, cocky. Because you knew that at the end of the day, if something went wrong, you had family, you had a garden, you could raise some veggies, you could go out and collect spear a fish or net a fish and do all of that, right?
Yeah.
And that gave you a sense of strength and worth. Now today, it gives you a sense of worry, bewilderment, disenfranchised. Because it's all about the companies and the agencies, and when you look sustainability, I believe that if we came up with the most perfect scenario for sustainable use of fuels, it would still be a burden on the people financially, because of the way HECO and the way others have given in and succumbed to the perfect management, so to speak, and the containment. Solar panels, you spoke of that, and I don't know all the details, but to know that you have a son, and we all now agree in it, there isn't sufficient evidence out there that says putting solar on homes, individual homes, would save the environment and generate energy and what have you. And yet there's such a struggle and a force to find your way through just to get hooked up to the system. Those are the kinds of things I talk about daily, we don't talk about the big failure, and I agree with you. There is an inevitable disaster coming. We can't continue at this pace.
So how do we collaborate in making it sustainable, the farming, reusable energy? How can we change the public officials' thinking and mentality from an economy of only construction for the rich to come to Hawaii and purchase these expensive real estate? How do we change the mentality, sir?
Right.
How do we get to them?
Hold on one second. Don't go away. We'll stay in this vein. Let me answer this one call. We want to be courteous. Hold on.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Just a moment, caller. I got a complaint that you were too noisy over there on the day that the election was occurring. I understand.
You have no idea. I was playing Tri Fox as loud as I could with a double Daniels and a beanbag.
Well, how are you? And go ahead with the comment.
Please, old man, shut up whenever you want.
I don't talk to myself like that anymore.
Okay. Well, the van emergency must determine if there is one. And the Ryder School delays, that was in this Wednesday, November 19th, last week. I went to the meetings and so forth, but is there an emergency? Yes, there was a fire, more than one fire. Why was there more than one fire? Why was the maintenance not adequate, number one? So that's an example of emergency. If you're on the van, and I've been on since 10 years, try to get off the van if there's a fire and anybody else is on the van. Next, the dialysis. Here, I want documentation. I don't speak unless I have documentation. Carol, this is not to you. Yeah, maybe it is to you. Yes, it is. This wonderful woman died a few weeks ago after her testimony. And my name is Paula Helm. I live in Red Hill. And this is the woman who died. She had dialysis, and she made this formal complaint. Now, in my residence, I have the resident manager whose wife was a dialysis patient, and I have his document here. Since the transfer of, etc., problem is the patients have to pre-schedule, regular schedule, etc., etc., complaints about ridership. So there are two examples of the emergency. There is an emergency. Let me try to make this clear. Emergencies could be solved perhaps by money, by funding. You are a relative who uses the ADA, American for Disability Ride, or you have a relative. Now, you need new transportation for your car and or some other means of transportation, but you have given me all your money. And now you come to a point where you have to ask for money to get new transportation. You go to the bank, but you can't obtain it. You can't get your money. You gave it to me. Now, let me equate this with 5307, which is the federal grant for urban transportation for ADA. Honolulu asked for federal help. They get 5307 money. It goes to the general fund, and then the HART takes it out of the general fund. It's kept by HART in their account. It's not used. It's not spent. So if the handy man wants to use money to try to help the operation of handy man, whether it be hardware, software, radio, maintenance, in new engines, new vans, new cars, whatever it might be, they can't get the money. So let me give you specific words.
Hold on. Where are we going with this now? I hear a lot of what we talked about last week in this. What is this? Has some new results from this meeting that you're talking about, or what? What are we?
Yes, 53.
I know we've talked about 53
or 7. They deny this. They deny. Okay. They won't tell you that the van can't get the money from because it's in the hard account.
Okay.
And if there's emergencies and the van could spend money to solve the emergencies, they can't get the money because the money is in the hard account.
So what is the solution? You heard me say in my opening statements, I'm a bit exhausted, to be very honest with you, to be grinding and the attrition rate is it taxes me to. I'm not the kind of person, and I know you personally are not this kind of person either, to just like to see people tell you problem after problem after problem, and then you say, what are you going to do? Well, I think they're okay, they're nice people, so I'm going to have to just give them another chance. Well, then give me a chance and leave me alone, because if you want something changed, and I'm sure you agree with this.
Of course.
You know, don't come to me and say his wife beat her, but you love him.
He's
a
nice
guy. I'm not saying you. Listen. So where do we go with all of these things that are broken? What about Sea Fodder? What about the other groups? What about the people out there? What are they going to do? I've heard this, and I know of this, that the money is there, but it's not being used either by Hart or by the van, but it was assigned and allocated. Where is it, and why is it being tolerated to allow it to be not be used?
I understand, but having spoken to many people, the people
right.
don't understand that this is what you just said. Now, what are the solutions? Sea Fodder is inconsequential. They're not going to act. There is no action coming from Sea Fodder. It's got nothing to do with individual people. It's the process. For whatever reason, Sea Fodder won't action on the part of the people. Next, if it is a lawsuit, then you need a lawsuit. Collective action on the part of the people, but it's gotten to that extreme. So if you want a solution, one, people must be involved. People must be educated. It has reached the point of past the talking. And the people who are in power are unethical. They are not going to act on your behalf, at least not up until as we speak. So therefore, until the people get the education whereby they want to act, nothing is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you call up at the time you did and mentioned rail. Because that was with the earlier call, and I hope that he calls back. We don't want to be pushing around different people, but call back, caller, and we can continue this conversation. But your timing was just perfect as far as the rail, because it was one of the things that I was going to share, an observation that I've made several occasions or in the past is that the people, a great many of the people that I know support the rail also is disgruntled and complain about other dysfunctional aspects of the government and the criminal behavior and the underhanded behavior and the under the table behavior and the wash my hand kind of climate, this environment. Now, isn't it funny that and this is trying to figure out what is really contributing to this problem. So I'm astounded by the way in which people, you take the rail is chock full of crime, the rail is chock full of favoritism, the rail is chock full of poor management or mismanagement of bad intentions. Everything, it brings with it a learning, a textbook, examples of failure and fraud and deceit and hurt government and uninformed people and the tolerance. But then people then step outside of the discussion of the rail and begin to complain about other dysfunctional aspects of the government. I don't understand how that can happen.
Rail?
I don't know. I mean, not just rail. It says something about the human mind when you can discern or dissect and be so aggressive in supporting and ignore all of the crime and the fraud and the misbehaving went on and the underhanded, backhanded behavior with PRP and others that are now in the news. How can some of us amongst us that are quite intelligent support the rail and ignore all of those things and then gravitate back and start to complain about the other aspects of government where it's not working?
First, you can't. There's collusion and conspiracy, of course, on the power of the media. Rail is the Trojan horse. It affects everything. They don't have enough money to complete the project. They must get the money from somewhere. Therefore, rail is at the source of the problem. And until we discern, educate ourselves as to how significant rail is, then the people have to act. People have to do something. I can give you the history of how it all started, but I won't. Mm-hmm. But you can't go forward unless you know the past.
Well, yeah, but I don't want to have to hear the past every day. I want to hear the newness of it, what's found as we go. You know?
Well, okay, then this past week they had a meeting on Tuesday. It was put on by C. Fodder, and they had John Black and Roger Morton and Formby, and they were a panel in front, and it was about 40 people there, and they were there about, this is as of Tuesday, the first question they asked was, how many of you are satisfied with the 48-hour restriction on calling in to get a ride? Two hands were raised. How many of you want to be able to call more than just 2 hours ahead, 2 days ahead, to get your ride? 37 hands went up. So, empirical fact, 37 people were upset in this one meeting, 2 supported it. What does that mean? It means delay. It means that 2 hour delay, 1 hour delay, on the phone, on the street, waiting for the demand, but there is delay.
Okay.
Now, I can give you the reason why there was delay. Because one, they restricted it at 2 days before. Well, that means that if you were on the dialysis for a month and you go 3 times a week and you order the dialysis for the month, you can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So when all of the people, whether it's dialysis or something else, when they want to call in 2 days before, you can't get flu.
So what did the group attending there go away with? What are they going to do? I mean, these things.
Let me put it, yes. What they say.
You mean the government or the art?
What Formby, Roger Morton say is the system works. Be patient. Just delays for now, but the problem will be solved. We will not change policy.
Okay, hold that thought, and I got other callers here, and we have another hour coming up, so feel free to call back or hold on.
All right, thank you.
Caller, go ahead with your comments or questions. Thanks for waiting.
Carol Cox is the person to talk to you about sustainability.
Right. Hey, we got about 6 minutes in, but go ahead and then feel free to call in the next hour or two. We're not in a hurry. Go ahead with your comments.
Okay, my comment, I know this rail issue is a big issue, but have you ever considered the other alternative of building a double-decker freeway? That might be very expensive. But the point I just thought about it just now is the retirement system that a lot of these government workers have. It's so big. It's a big proposition of a lot of money. And when they're retired, all they're supporting is their own lifestyle. All the restaurants, they make high retirement income. And so, is it really a productive for our order? Maybe we can restructure the financial systems here in Hawaii so that money goes where there's productivity and creativity, and we can be more sustainable. The seniors have put in into their... the seniors now, a lot of them have worked for many years and are deserving to have a livable lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
Like with the van and everything. But I believe we can restructure our financial system to mm-hmm. be more sustainable. You know how much the government, the state government retirement plan alone is? $2 billion, and even the Postal Service is so burdening when it's in the billions. They're the retirement program.
We were good to everybody here. Hold on. And again, let's keep this conversation going. And in the next hour, if we run out of time, start the next hour. And because I have a packet here that I was going to talk in the next hour about cost of rail and what it is. But hold on. Good morning, caller. Real quickly, go ahead with
it. Thank you. I'm calling back. The last caller mentioned alternatives, and the alternatives could have been monorail, failure system, rubber on concrete. It could have been the easy way by Ann Kobayashi. They were all terminated by Garcia and the administration, Mufi, etc. So when he talks about alternatives, it's an excellent idea, but you have to have the power to enact it, and I'll call back later.
Or the decency to do what's right.
Absolutely. We don't operate at a moral, ethical level with them. Please, I've been since 2008. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll call back
all
later.
Right. Go ahead, caller. Regarding your budget, you were talking about the retirement budget.
The retirement budget is... You know, our financial situation, I don't know much about it. I know it's some of these people, like a colonel.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the military, when he retires, he makes $70,000 in retirement. $70,000. Some make $100,000 in retirement. And they're not even working.
And you know, the funny thing is, I have a little note here to ask that question openly, and that is, if we are able to pay that much to a retired military or retired federal agency or employer or state, government is not supposed to make money. Where do we suppose this money is coming from to pay that pension? Taxes, huh?
Sir, and I like to talk about, you know, President Obama,
mm-hmm.
He vetoed a bill that for all those who are on welfare assistance, from giving them work ration. Did you know that?
No, I'm not familiar with that one. That one escaped me.
Yeah, he vetoed a bill that all those who are on welfare wouldn't have to do work ration. And so,
what bill is that now? Do you know?
I don't know exactly. I can find it for you. But
yeah,
find
it. I always like to let others know, and then we can talk about it briefly, peripherally here. But I'd like to be able to, the person that's really interested and want to be informed, go back and look it up.
Okay, so, and also this retirement program, it doesn't promote creativity in our society for the younger generation. A lot of them, so much welfare case. Is it the mentality of the government that they're blessing the younger generation to be on welfare case? You go in and walk the streets and ride the bus. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of young families. They have children, they're collecting welfare.
What would it cost Howard Hughes Corporation or any entity to actually pay fair market value for the land that it's going to acquire in the use of the bay there and all of that? What would it really cost, the fair market price? Any idea?
I don't know.
See, these are the things that the real welfares that we don't talk about. And so I agree with you. We need to cling the entire process. But when we speak of welfare, are we talking about corporate welfare, or are we talking about agricultural welfare, or are we talking about company welfare? Well, if you let me build here and give me a tax break, I'll come in and create jobs. And then you find out it's never a delivery. Anyway, we're down to the last seconds, but give me 5 minutes and call. Feel free to call back, all right?
Thank you.
Aloha. All righty, we'll be right. Black boy, with a dirty heart.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Got money and a bank. Don't let your woman draw it out. Cause she will spend your money and she will throw you out. Oh Lord, Lord, Lord. Cry, Lord, Lord, Lord. Well, I used to be a regular. Now I've got to be your dog. You're the cause of me, bro. How can you be so mean? They are taking all my money. Get it to you, no good man. That I have had money, but now I'm cold in hand. There's only woman that I'm loving, living with another man. My love, Lord, Lord, oh Lord, Lord, and all. That I used to be your regular. Now I've got to be your dog. That I knew my baby. She sure was jumping shot.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. 524-1080 is the number, and we're talking about a variety of things, sustainability, energy, corruption, you name it, whatever aching the belly today, I guess. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Thank you very much. I do not want to consume that much time, but conclusions is absolutely essential. I agree with you. First of all, it is proven that a life death-threatening crisis exists. And now what should we do? Shock and awe, we should use the therapy of shock now on behalf of the people against the power. How do you do that? Well, not well, I'm not sure the order, but petition power to correct the crisis that exists. People must petition, collectively come together, organize, petition. Number two, vote them out of office. And, of course, it takes time, but that's one conclusion. Next, we could assemble. Could sit in. Civil liberties. It's been done before. I was in San Francisco when they had the sit-ins in the 60s, and at the Van Ness Avenue Cadillac dealership, we sat inside and at San Francisco State College, etc. So therefore, that was a solution that helped to solve civil liberties. Now, there is a triennial review. Make sure that we have federal documentation, and I have the documents. And this triennial review is made of the van. It's made by the public transportation system. And in 2012, this is what they found deficiencies in 8 areas, financial, technical, procurement, disadvantage, et cetera. I'm not going to go on. So you got the triennial review, but the federal government has to know about it. This problem has to be solved. Capsulize collective action on the part of the people.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Aloha.
I appreciate your help so very, very much on behalf of all of us. Thank you.
I benefit from it, too. Thank you so much. Aloha. Caller, go ahead. Thanks for waiting with your comments or questions. Hello? Anyway, try call back. It's line's always open. Sustainability. This reminds me of A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's a play. The actors interchangeably. It's as if any of the local politicians have gone to school and have learned to play the supporting role, whatever that role is, and evidence of that is looking at the musical chairs that occur within state government. And you look at, and keep in mind, now we talk about retirements and what have you, but state government here, as well as some most federal, is run by the director, we think. But in reality, it is the person, the old guard, who sits there to carry out the wishes of the party. And so they bring in a new guy. Let's say I become appointed as a director. I have my orders for this reigning governor. But yet, that person that works below me, that is permanent and going to get that pension, is there either by he or she is already retired and stepped back in and getting a temporary and going to retire again in a different agency. So they know what sustainability is, but it, in the wrong way. Well, I guess callers, if you're going to call in, be a little patient. I've been accused in my young age of being an octopus, but I damn sure not one now. So just give some patience here. So. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment or questions.
My comment is, I've heard a couple, three of the callers calling in about the term sustainability. Mm-hmm. What is sustainability? Can you give me something to say of what is sustainability?
Well, if you were here, I'd jump up and give you a high five, and because that's what I've always that's the lure word. It takes vagaries and put them all in one box, and it looks as though they're doing something. And I've always been suspicious of, you know, in this town we had terms like hotspot. Remember when Michael Wilson was he's now the judge, was the head of DLNR. We had hotspots. And, you know, and it's a buzzword for the month, sustainability. Sustainability.
But what is the definition of
sustainability? Well, sustaining yourself, you know. Sustaining yourself in a general sense. There's certain actions, or you want it to continue. How do you sustain that? How do you sustain yourself in your job? Sustenance. Something. I haven't looked at the dictionary for it, but on the face value. But in reality, it's just taking vagaries, as we have come to learn, and paste over that conversation to say it's sustainable. Well, sustainable in the theory is that we want to minimize the number of gallons of fuel oil that we burn, the number that we demand on and require, right? Or the number of trees, and we want to preserve rather than using it for the day. We want to have it repeated, regenerating it, like solar power is sustainable, right?
Well, one of the most sustainable sources of energy is oil. And oil will be around and will be needed for time immemorial to keep us going until someone develops a source to keep an airliner or a military jet in the air. I'm not going to worry about it. They're not going to have a solar part or on an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, solar, that's the thing with technology as it evolves, or how many alien ships land and we steal and reverse engineering what we find aboard the aircraft, the craft. But sustainability, you won't eat yourself out of house and home. I mean, you take, you ever hear the kebab or kibab study where they, it was Roosevelt, I think, prescribed the method of going in and killing all of the predators because the deer population was going down, right? And so what happened? Well, what happened is that they went in and shot out the predators, and then they had this great population of deer, and then all of a sudden that was, oh, impressive. But it then got out of house, out of hand, and they start to eat themselves out of house and home, the deer. And you had sickened deer, no predators. So sustainability, in theory, and that's what it is, a theory, because unless you control population, consumption, and you want to use something that's replaceable, but how do you replace oil? Once you burn it, how do you replace it?
Well, I think there's enough oil in the United States itself to run for another 500 years, and you and I won't be around when it does run out. I'm sure by that time something will have been developed.
Well, let me ask you this. What if your mother and father were out there and they said, looked at one another and said, "Sweetheart, you're beautiful. We should have some children and call them Ed." And one of your parents say, "No, I don't think I want that." And they then decided, someone gave in, and there's a Ed. So what if we all took that attitude that, we don't want any children. And so, yeah, we could go another 500 years, but we would be selfish. And I don't want to arrive at the pearly gates or anywhere with a selfish background. I don't want to do that, and I think it's incumbent on us to simply say, it's okay to care. It doesn't cost you anything to care. It doesn't to be sensible and move toward reusable and reduce the use and all of that. That's just no science about it. It's just not being selfish. You know,
It's not that I'm saying that we don't care about the future people. I'm saying, by that time, I'm sure science will have developed something that will replace oil, and wind can do some of it, but wind cannot, power cannot keep an airplane in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what my point is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other point is, like, your caller keeps getting calling on your ear, and he keeps talking about the handy van. You know, getting to dialysis, though, you've had a point that I had to get the dialysis, and I need to get there a certain time. I had to wait 2 hours for a handy van. I'd call a cab.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand this complaint. All these people are complaining at that meeting about the drivers and all this, and they're late. You're going to be late in this traffic car. I had an appointment downtown for a class.
Well, here's
because there was a traffic accident.
Mm-hmm. Here's something I come to terms with. Let's assume that the people that are calling and complaining that they can't get a van, they can't get this, and it's true. Let's say they want something for nothing, and that may be true. But again, if we just look across the table and see there's an entire agency that is tasked with making sure, and we're paying those people. So do we look at the people that is intended recipients of the services and say, go away, you're just complaining? Or do we say, look at the people, it's already established. It's not the individual sitting at home waiting for a van that created the problem. It's already agreed upon. So these directors and managers and CEOs are getting paid to do exactly what it is you and I are listening to, but we describe it as being complaining. So we either get rid of the entire process, you see, but if we were to say, okay, guys, shut up and just wait for the van, then that we turn to the directors and say, get moving, we don't need you. You see? This.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But
so,
thinking that the government runs or the state runs, there's going to be a whole bunch of incompetency involved.
So,
now, as far as getting to your doctor or to your dialysis, since this is a medical problem and they're probably having medical care, I would say do away with the handy van. Make sure that if you have a doctor's appointment, that you have a voucher to catch a cab to get you from home to doctor to back home, and that is paid for by Medicare, since it's a necessary part of your medical treatment, and get rid of the handy van.
Well, you know, let me share with you, and maybe along the way in life we'll all learn something one day and say it's okay. It's actually okay to care about the other human being. It really is. I swear to you, you won't believe that there's such a joy. It's stupefying to just care. It knocks you off your feet. So, yes, they are, let's just say, 98% of them just want a free ride. But I had the occasion to go to house with Meals on Wheels, for example, and to see those people. They were hardworking and they're well-established and all, but they've gotten aged and ill. And to see their eyes, just to interact with one human being once a week, it pushes aside all the macho attitude about, well, you know, they could get this, and they should just get off their asses and go out there, and if they want a ride, go get a taxi. Well, the reality is a great many of them can't afford it. They can't afford it and can't even coordinate these things on their own. So, you know, I agree if we want to toe a line of, let's put them in that place and tell them you just want a free ride. Well, yeah, but for me, Ed, I would say one day it would be, I'd like to invite you to just pull up your pants, roll up your pants leg, and put your big toe in the pool of care. And once you do that, it reverberates throughout your body. You forget all that other, they are this, and God has sorted out, whatever the powers to be will sort it out if they're sitting there playing the system. But in a climate where every day we wake up, somebody's killing someone and a bomb went off here, isn't it kind of nice that we, here in America, we could care about one another and whether you, whatever it is? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm not talking about not caring. I'm thinking about using alternative means to getting people to their dialysis.
Right. Well, and I agree. We've already agreed with that. But it's just something, the bug bit me a long time ago. And I don't know, I used to go as a 7, 8-year-old kid to the what we call the poor farm in Mississippi with an aunt of mine, and we would take cake and ice cream and roses that she would have raised in her garden there in Bolivar County. And so once you see that, you don't grow up thinking, well, look at these guys, they're looking for the easy way out. It never crosses your mind. And then you say, well, this is what it is about being a human being. You know, we don't claw at one another. We care for one another. And that's what it's all about. It government should be functional to the point that if there are programs in place, the governmental employees must carry those wishes out. If not, they should get out of the business. Let me get to the other call. Any questions?
Yeah, just my last statement. I think maybe I'm fortunate that I was able to plan ahead and things worked out.
So. Well, good, and you should pat yourself on the back, and you know, and but don't dismiss everybody. Everybody, and there are many of them probably made some bad decisions, man. I'm telling you, fell in love and chased a girl, chased a man, and spent the money and spent the groceries and rent check and went to hell from there. We just never know. But in our situation, what does it cost you to care? I see the government, people standing around at the park sleeping. That's where we see the waste. Let's go get that. All right, well, thank you.
I'll just end by saying this.
Mm-hmm.
So far as I know, there's no such thing as a utopia. That's
exactly. You're right. No kidding. Yep. Okay, well, thank you. Go ahead, caller, please, with your comments or comment.
Thank you. I'll be very quick. Regarding the last call, please find out how much it costs to take a cab Kalihi to my dentist in Kaimakee. And if I have to go to the medical building at Lilyhan School Street, how much does it cost to take a cab? If I want to go to Cam Shopping Center and it costs $6 to and $6 back, that's $12. How much is it going to cost to go to Ala Moana in a cab?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the federal government could provide the service. The federal government does provide the service. 5307 is funding that's going to go to the van. And the city took it. It's misused, so it's misused by the local government. And I shall stop. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Aloha, thank you. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comments. Your
good morning. I'm coming back to when one of your callers said that the, I think that the person said that the retired military maybe get like $7,000 in retirement.
But anyway, 70, I think he said.
Oh, whatever. But it was a large amount of retirement money. My point is this: that a few years ago, several years ago, I called to find out what percentage of the state tax revenue comes from the excise tax, and at that time it was 52%. That's a huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these people, as I understand it, even though they're retired and no longer, in active military, they could still shop in these tax-free stores on their bases,
mm-hmm.
and including that big shopping mall at near Salt Lake Boulevard anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are depriving us of a tremendous amount of tax revenue. And therefore, in my opinion, these people, as long as they continue to not support the state with tax money, they should not be in any decision-making position. And
mm-hmm.
I just read recently that a retired colonel or something like that is, maybe superintendent, I don't know, a big job with a DOE anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they are not carrying their share of the tax burden.
Well, interesting you would mention that. I we've talked about this before,
yes.
And you've called in the past. There is a couple interesting things that we're in a quagmire, in a sense. We're damned if we do and damned if we don't with this voting community. So we take, right now, Tekai, Gabbard, and DeJoux would have been, if elected, either. They're active duty military. So that any of you out there, don't come calling me up because I wouldn't answer you anyway, and don't write me emails. But I think that the problem starts here in Hawaii, especially. It was already corrupt. And there's this mindset to hire many of the military people because they can take orders. While that may be fine and dandy, and you want that commitment, and you want that, you don't want to be asked questions when you say, I need 20 men over here, a platoon over here. You don't have time to go, why? We understand that.
Yeah.
But in the civilian world, when you have weevils in the wheat or people that are sitting there robbing the public and stealing and falsely representing that they're doing something, and then they recruit military, and then for the values that they know how to take orders, they know how to keep quiet, they're a team player. We're not looking for team players on a team that is stealing from the people. You see,
uh-huh.
And as I say, anybody out there that you want to send letters and names, they'll go unanswered, and I will ignore them because the reality is, as I'm finding it, it's a lopsided situation. We hear about, well, we're going to bring the military and create more jobs, and we're going to create more housing, and the housing, oh, they're leaving now. Well, what's going to happen to the housing? Oh, we're going to, you understand. So the community as such, the Hawaiian community, not the native people, but everybody here is impacted. We're sold this bill of goods, but reality, it's not working for us. They have a naval exchange. They can go there and buy everything. Then they can come back and gravitate to Costco, which is their right. But our legislators who bring in the military should be striking a balance and saying, we want to infuse all of the military activity into the economy. And so we need to check, for example, the BEQ. When you get BEQ handed to you to pay your rent, you're basically competing with people out there that are looking for jobs and trying to find a rent. Yeah, so that's the other, whether it's intentional or not, we don't speak to those issues. So there's something wrong.
It's really a huge impact on negative impact on our you know, on our economy.
Right.
And but people think, oh, they bring in, I don't know, like $5 billion. If it's not tax money, it's not helping us at all.
Right. And you know, everything is going to be a job. And now they're saying,
that's,
you know,
that's a magic word.
And again, I you know, I'm going to be honest with you. It brings no pain to my heart to see Ann Kobayashi and the others sitting there going, well, you promised us 1,000 or 10,000 jobs, but you know we only got 700. Or, yeah, not that. I'm, but it's some god-awful, horrible difference in what was promised, right? Huh. You promised this, and you told us that, and reality, and I'm thinking, when are you going to ever learn?
Maybe so. The people are just too gullible, I think. You know, they think, oh,
well, yeah.
The word is jobs, and so, like what? You know, so did Hitler created a lot of jobs, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly, an earthquake creates a lot of jobs. It doesn't mean it's good if it's destroying the environment and imposing horrendous taxation on the people eventually and so on and so on.
And
really good.
They are creating jobs in their minds, but jobs for who?
Yeah, that's the big question.
But a lot of the jobs that are created for city CIP work and all of that's work, what they do, they hire contractors, and the contractors go out and hire unlicensed contractors and people that can do the job and pay them by the hour and no benefits or anything. So they're really not contributing. You take downtown at the Honolulu Zoo, I talked about the hippopotamus. That contract in itself, a lot of the people that we later learn are working without any contracts or anything. They just pay them by the day.
But, yeah.
And so who amongst us will stand up as legislators and city councilmen and tell the truth rather than presenting this good face and then vote it in later and walk away?
Well, I get the feeling that they don't have any choice, and what I want to know is why. You know, people that I once admired disappointed me so much.
They have choices. It's
I don't know. I'm a little worried about.
Well, let's take for
what's going on.
Let's take a case in point. If your child walking home, if you have children, let's assume, and your son walks home, a daughter walks home, and there's a bicycle, brand new shiny bicycle, laying there every day. And you've taught them well, or her well, and they come home, they never show up with a bicycle. But one day they show up with a bicycle. What happened there? And it's not theirs. What happened? How did they end up with a brand new bicycle?
I'm just more worried that, for instance, that somehow the developers have some kind of strange power.
Well, no. No, you know what the strange... control is... Money. Money has dust on it. And when they fan it open, you take the Nestor Garcias, for example.
I don't want to believe you, but maybe.
Well, I mean, what would prompt them? Let's say making a decision and just walking away is one thing. But making a decision and then going back to the developer and become part of his payroll, that's another, you see. That's taking it beyond that. So it doesn't take much to believe there or convincing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, where do we start to accept or whatever? I mean, if it's just a natural reaction where they're just dumb or got duped, that's one thing. But to be taken abroad, taken to Washington, D.C., wine and dine with $200 dinners, and not even bother to ask how much it costs, that's beyond just being gullibility. That's being gulping, getting as much as you can.
No, I meant that the public, the people, the voters, are the ones that are gullible, and so they'll vote for those who are in favor of, say, development because it creates jobs, because then the voters think, oh, we'll get good jobs that way.
Yeah,
I think...
I
believe it will.
I think what happens is that this process, people have to be given examples,
yeah,
and eventually,
agree. Yeah, that's the problem.
And we don't want them to just run out there and start voting the way we think they should.
No.
We'll let them make their own decisions.
Yeah, that's
right.
They need to be informed.
Okay, well, thank you. Aloha. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Yeah, just commenting on the lady who said that, you know, the military is not doing their share of the burden to support the state because they have commissaries and Navy Exchange to do the shopping. right now, Waihoa is quaking in their boots because the military is thinking about taking 30,000 troops out of this island. And one time, they were going to close the naval shipyard until Inouye put the pressure on to keep the shipyard open. This place would be another Detroit if the military left. And the military provides a good source of Pearl Harbor employs thousands. Where are these guys going to work? They thought about moving it to Bremerton, Washington.
Yeah. Well, let's anyone, now first of all, that go out and build a policy or build an economy on the military is really not good managers. While you may, with caution, incorporate the placement of the military here and the presence of it, but remember, world politics and world incidences dictate the need for soldiers in various places. So if the strategy is, if the incidents are not happening here but on the Atlantic side, why on earth would we have soldiers stationed here when we need to have them closer to the theater? So if we've overlooked that, first of all, shame on us.
I have to disagree because the military was originally based here because of its strategic location.
Because we were fighting who? The Japanese, right?
Well, right now the Chinese are our biggest foe.
I didn't say any specific time. I say when we build our economy based on something that is permanent, that's not permanent. Things could flare up in other places around the world. So that dictates. So we need not put all our eggs in one basket. That's my point.
Absolutely. So, but the military is here based on the strategy, based on world, the world situation. Now, we have situation in the east and potential in the west, in China. And,
yeah.
So.
Well, I'm nervous.
But still, you know, we as taxpayers, we have to. Good portion of money goes to support the military, billions.
Yeah.
We've got people at a station and. In Germany, they've got thousands of people stationed in Germany, and yet the wars, World War II is over, and of course the Russians still remain, and that's why we keep people in Germany.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying our local leaders should become more familiar with, because when things change geographically or politically around the globe. Don't get pissed when the federal government says, well, look, you know, or the Pentagon says, well, it's just strategically it's not good to have. I don't know the details of it, and I'm not speaking to any specific. But who on this smart place would sit there and say, well, look, all these soldiers are here now. Let's build our economy around it and lock it in. And then one day some political event occurs that changes a whole cloth. And now you're whining, oh, well, we're going to lose business if you deploy it. What are they going to go tell the Pentagon? Don't deploy the 30,000 troops?
Well, anyway.
Because we need the chicken shop open, because the chicken shop brings money and, you know, spending money to, you know. I mean, we need to, that's how unrealistic we are as people in this state as it goes today. We let our leaders commit ourselves.
Get off the air, but my comment was a naivety of this woman that the military is not doing the share to support this state.
Well, she's called up and presented some substantial information on that, and it's no secret. You know, the military pays for the schools. For each child that is military goes to school, they pay money for that. On Wheeler, there's a school on Wheeler that I think public kids can that goes there. So there's some trade-off because it's still all American government. But the reality is that it's the demand on the resources. And the land consumed by the military. And I think when you take all of that, that's when people start to say, we're not getting our bang for our buck. You know, how many acres are up there in Schofield Barracks? Right?
Well,
how many fires?
Barracks has been there since the 20s and the 30s. I don't think they've increased their acreage. They've got the acreage that they got in the beginning.
Well, yeah, they're building houses up there. They're expanding.
30,000 troops leave and they move it out. Maybe more housing will be available in Waihewa, but the businesses would lose out.
Well, Iroquois Point, we don't have to guess what will happen. Iroquois Point pretty much closed up and as military went into private operation. How many people did it take off the street?
Well, I don't know.
Not many.
There's still military quarters on Barber's Point. And
On Barber's Point? Yeah, you mean at the Coast Guard station?
No, at Barber's Point, Kailai-Ilor, there's a lot of military housing there. And military still live there. And there's they just closed the commissary a few years ago, but there's still military presence.
Right.
Point.
Well, no, I'm not disputing that or taking issue with it. The in the general sense, it's just that the impacts and the costs that the military places on. Would you agree that the military, the rental, the costs that they have, and that the renter, these companies that know that, know how much the BEQ and have an influence? And they know that, so they raise the price up to get every penny they can out of that BEQ. How does that, is that fair to the citizen who's in the same market?
Well, this is what happened when Barber's Point closed. There was no necessity for Iroquois housing, so the military contracted to a private company, and they had to market the rents based on the economy.
Or they could have, I've heard this argument before, and you're right, they didn't have to go with those private individuals. They could have gone through a program and allowed individuals to buy those homes. They didn't have to go to Forest City. They didn't have to go to Hunt. They didn't have to go to Ventura Capital. They didn't have to, but that's the, but when you're all in bed with one another, then you have to. See, that's the difference between, and I think we've failed to factor that in and give that public disclosure.
Well, I know the average rent for Iroquois Point for a three-bedroom is about $1,400 to
$1,700. Mm-hmm. So there,
going to some of the communities on the beach, the rent is $2,500 to $1,000.
So the reality is we know we have a population of people, citizens, that need homes, and we take this nice strategy and say, well, we can create one, and you allow private entities to come in, and you foreign entities to come in, never build a house in the day of life, they were banking, and become actus lend lease and build all the military houses.
You know, we've had public housing for years, KTP and Kalihi housing, and some of these people have been there for 30-something years.
No, I'm not talking about public housing. I'm talking about housing.
Subsidizing housing for the people.
No, I'm talking about housing that would have been available, could have been situated on military, former military land, and approached it the way, given thought to allowing individuals to buy condos and or in those small homes that they had there, like at Iroquois Point. They didn't do that. They went to their big buddies, and that's what's plaguing Hawaii and contributing also to the population of homeless.
Now, you know, it takes like Barber's Point. There's a point when a situation is getting tense in Asia and everything about taking Barber's Point back again and reactivating the base.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now the action is all in the Middle East, so that kind of eased off. So,
right.
Change and the world situations change, and we have to run with it. But anyway, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Awesome. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Anyway, we're talking about monies and what have you. Let me just, before we engage with the other callers regarding the sustainability and all, and I don't consider it being taken off track. It is what it is, and there's many issues out there, and with social media and TV and radio and the newspaper, it comes at you from all angles, and so feel free. I'm not offended, and I hope those of you that do call in and that put you on hold or move to the next caller, don't take it personal. It's just the way life comes at us. But I was starting to talk about the human environmental risk ranking of on-site sewage disposal systems on Oahu. This is a final report written by Robert B. Whittier and Ali I. El Kadi, done in 2009, and I obtained this from the Department of Health, inquiring about the Kahului area. So basically, the project was funded by the Environmental Protection Agency through the state of Hawaii's Department of Health Safe Drinking Water Branch. Funding was provided through the Wellhead Protection Program, while the Clean Water Branch funding was provided by Section 319 funding through Polluted Runoff Control Program. And why should we, you know, just polluted water is one thing. Why should we be concerned? This is the executive summary from that. The introduction, the risk that sewage effluent released to the environment poses to human health and the environment is well documented. Studies assessing human health risk from wastewater include Rudy and Rudy, who reviewed cases of waterborne disease outbreaks in developed countries, tabulating 75 outbreak cases. Water contamination was identified as the major cause of 40 of those cases. Typical of these cases was an outbreak that involved an OSDS, on-site disposal system, occurred in Washington County Fair, New York State, in 1989, resulting in two deaths. The suspected source of the pathogens was a septic tank seepage pit located 38 feet away from the well used to make beverages and ice at the fair. Now, you're talking about having a drink with your buddies, and that's a real stiff drink. But a total of 781 infections of either enteropathogenic coli bacteria or Campylobacter jejuni were confirmed, and a follow-up survey indicated that at least 2,800 people were infected. Other developed countries also have experienced similar disease events. So I caught that, and I'm thinking, but when the state received this in September, maybe early, because see in their report that I have, they have a document they share with me, the Kahului caution sign posting. And basically, this is what basically a chairperson of the Kahului Neighborhood Board called Watson Okubu, supervisor of the Clean Water Branch Monitoring and Analysis Section, requesting special sampling be done to determine the source of pollution that was causing problems for the Kahului community. At the July 2014 Kahului Neighborhood Board meeting, a resident in the community reported open sores, staph infections among the canoe paddlers, boaters, and fisher whose activities center around the flood control outlet at Kahului Beach. And the CWB Clean Water Branch determined that there were no recent sewage spills in the area and that there is no CNC sewer lines servicing the area. Now, I don't want to be too hard and pushy like I know every damn thing here, but I have photographs, and they may be able to say they're not that kind of a sewage plant. But coming from the Ahui Manu plant, as you cross the bridge, there's a pipe that runs alongside the bridge that says sewage. And so I don't understand when they claim that there is no sewage pipe, but I'm not going to take issue with it. Kahului is a heavily cesspool. Clean Water Branch discussed the issue with Wastewater Branch and Safe Drinking Water. All agreed to work together to address the complaint, with Clean Water taking the monitoring lead. The Environmental Management Division Chief, Director of Environmental Health, were notified. And so this is what I'm about to say, is that I don't have the documentation yet, and I anticipate getting something or but this sounds like the beating of the drums, the foot dragging, the creating the climate. And what we're going to find out is that They're saying about 973 OSDS, and that's the on-site disposal system, like septic tanks, in the Kahului watershed, of which about 681 are cesspools. What I see coming here is that there is someone with a special interest or have oversight or a company that this process is going to be steered, and they're going to say, we need to build a sewage treatment plant or a wastewater treatment plant. And there are certain people in line to get these contracts. Now, this is concerned of me because it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, because the Clean Water, Wastewater, and Department of Health knew that in 2009, and they knew that, and by the way, when they tell you and you read a document, say there's so many cesspools here and there, that's not accurate. It's all guesswork. They're either relying on the drinking water, the Board of Water Supply, or the Clean Water Branch. When you put in our wastewater permit, you put in, because in the old days, they only did it by card, and you filled it out. And believe it or not, a great portion of that has never been logged. So when the state and Gary Gill tell you, give you specifics about this, about that, just look at him with jaundiced eyes and say, but what are you relying on? What are you drawing from? Because my knowledge that I have tells me that in your own statements, we can't be accurate. We don't really know. We're guessing at this. And so this is the problem with the Kahului thing, to let it sit there and fester and fester. And I know we've talked about it many occasions. But the problem is, I think there's some kind of setup or paving of the way or clearing the path that some special interest will get involved and find out. Because if it's 907, since most of the Kahului watershed is not sewered, one possible source could be the on-site disposal system. OSDS includes septic systems and cesspools, according to the records. With wastewater branch and solid waste, wastewater branch, state drinking water branch, there are approximately 973. Currently, wastewater branch is proposing changes to the HAR 1162 involving cesspool rules, and there has been testimony against changes to the rules. Understanding the sensitive issue, DOH needs to make sure that the source of high bacteria levels is correctly identified. If we know that these things in that area presents a problem, why don't they go ahead and do what is necessary and what is right by the for the environment? DOH works to identify the sources of the high bacteria counts. The DOH is notifying the public high indicator bacteria levels in surface waters of Kahului. Caution signs are up and what have you. But the Clean Water Branch will continue weekly monitoring the sites in Kahului to track bacterial levels and identify suitable sites for more sophisticated testing. Clean Water has already identified a new test methodology that will be used and are in discussion with researchers. Now, the funny thing is, in all of this talk, show you the basic fundamentals are overlooked and ignored by the health department. This will give you, if this one statement will give you an idea of something's wrong. EPA recommends Enterococci as an indicator bacteria for marine waters and Enterococci for E. coli for indicator species bacteria for freshwater. So one species by the EPA does marine waters and another for freshwater. That's the EPA standard they rely on. The Clean Water Branch uses Intercrossi for both marine and fresh water. Now, why would the EPA do it one way and rely on different bacteria, but the state uses one? Why? However, the Intercrossi, my throat's killing me now, has been shown to replicate in soil, sand, decaying organic matter, biofilm, etc., as well as being present in the intestines of animals and birds. The Clean Water Branch refers to these as background levels. But the 2,882.5 CFUs, when normally it should, the natural is 35. So something's wrong with this process. And I believe that they talk about the Alawai and the 49 million gallons of water there and comparing it. But there's some real serious issues with this clean water in it situation there. And I will tell you, I believe that there is hanky-panky within the Department of Health. And I believe that they shouldn't have had to wait for someone to get sick and others of the entire community to be impacted. They should have been out sampling or having others sample because they have a sewage treatment plant. And if they know that it's been identified how many cesspools are in the area, and we know cesspools leak and overflow, and we know we have had substantial rains. So I'm not buying it. I believe that we're being set up on behalf of some company, and I will be digging and scratching to find out where is the politics in this, because the foot dragon surely suggests that somebody is trying to line the pockets of someone here, because these are easily approached and solution is right there at hand. Test, and we could determine quickly and rule out quickly causes and potential contaminators. But again, if you delay, the public will pay eventually. And they need a sewage treatment plant in that area. They have one at Ahuimanu, but they need something, and they need to bring in all those structures and facilities up there. And there's an equation. It may be many more than what is being reflected in this report, because it was never accurately, the information relied on was never accurately presented. So, anyway, I'm still working on, I just sent a letter on a different subject to Mr. Stephen Chang. I may have shared with you that at the Hawaii, the Kamehameha Schools ground, the illegal dump sites that we uncovered, it has been brought to my attention that the state health department actually is covering up and hiding photographs depicting barrels, 55-gallon drums, or barrels, or cans of contaminants. And some indicate, the report is now allegedly, that creosote and other contaminants or chemicals were dumped and buried in tires. And yet we requested that of Mr. Chang. He indicated initially that his people are not taking pictures. Only Kamehameha Schools is taking pictures. You go figure that one out. And if they're the regulator, number one. And number two, that finally I confronted him and told him in person that, look, I'm aware that there are these photographs taken by your inspector. Instead of saying, no, that's not true, it said, how did you find out? Well, let me talk to the inspector and see if we can present you or give you the copies. Don't bother giving me the copies. Let us know, let the public know in general, what is up there, what contaminants are there. So this is, hopefully, if we don't get some action, we will be taking it to court and going from that angle. Because when the state outright lies to you, and then when caught as a deer in headlights, ask you, how did you find out? That's the end of the game there for me. So we'll see you next week, and thank you for listening in. Aloha.
sentimental mood. I can't see the stars come through my room while your loving attitude is like a flame that lights the gloom on the wings of every kiss.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.